Hello, and welcome to the BTG Podcast. I am your host, Jen Fable, of BTG Wellness and LiveLifeUnbroken.com. BTG stands for Bridge the Gap, and it is inspired by my own healing journey. After receiving 7 different mental health diagnoses by the age of 19, I quickly realized that there was a massive gap between what I believed and understood in my head and what I truly felt in my heart. And no matter how many therapists I went to, I couldn't seem to bridge that gap until I found the tools and information that I share in my one-on-one private sessions, trainings, and right here on this podcast. My goal is to help you begin to bridge that gap by bringing you different topics related to mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being. And in case you didn't know, this podcast is recorded live during my weekly Zoom virtual healing circles. These are weekly virtual gatherings that are 100% free, and no RSVP is required. So you are welcome to come whenever you can and stay as long as you want. Each week, we open the space with a candle meditation, after which I will share with you my favorite grounding practices and lead you through a circle casting, guided meditation, and breath work, followed by a soul-inspiring gratitude practice. If you are interested in learning more about how you can continue your journey and experience my virtual healing circles in real time, please visit www.btgwellness.com/circle and join my free circle membership. Of course, if you like what you hear in today's episode, please remember to leave a review and share the love by sharing this episode with your friends, family, and social network. And as always, if you have any questions, please know you can always reach out to me through my website at www.btgwellness.com or through email or social media. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Virtual Healing Circle with me, Jen Fable of BTG Wellness and LiveLifeUnbroken.com. And tonight we're talking about by far one of my favorite topics, because it's one that is so profoundly important in our life. And it's one that a lot of us don't really know a whole lot about, which seems backwards to me. So I'm really excited to help give this information to you guys and talk about your attachment style, which really is, what does love mean to you? So why is this important? This is important because how we show up in relationships, whether it's a friendship, whether it's with coworkers, whether it's a romantic relationship, is largely determined by how we interact with our caregivers in the first 1 to 2 years of our life. This is important because knowing how you're showing up in relationships, knowing your attachment style, gives you a lot of information. If you're looking to do shadow work, your attachment style is the deepest layer that you can go when it comes to how you connect with others. And this is important because without this information, you're likely going to keep repeating the same patterns over and over and over again. Everyone I meet, it always ends up this way, always ends up the same way. So this is really helpful to break that pattern. So what is attachment theory? What am I talking about when I say your attachment style? So attachment theory is based on the work of a British psychiatrist and psychoanalyst named John Bowlby. This was back in the 1950s. He analyzed how children responded when their primary caregiver left the room. So he set up a little lab where he was viewing, and he watched little toddlers and little babies playing. And then the mom would get up, and there's, of course, someone still monitoring the child, so they're safe. Mom gets up, leaves the room, kids alone in the room. And what's interesting is that it wasn't only how the child responded when mom left, like whether or not they cried or not, but more, how did the child welcome their mother or their primary caregiver back? How did they respond when they came back into the room? And based on this information, he noticed different styles in how the children responded. Attachment theory is based on the idea that your relationship with your primary caregiver, now most of the time that is the mother, but it doesn't have to be. So that relationship determines how you show up socially and romantically in all of your relationships. This style develops within the first 1 to 2 years of your life, and it remains stable. That means you don't outgrow it. It's not like one of these, oh, well, it's just growing pains, and I'll eventually just outgrow it, and it'll somehow fix itself. Whatever your attachment style is in those first 2 years of life, remain stable until you actively do something to work on it and heal. So how does your attachment style actually develop? Well, when you are first born, when we're all first born, we are completely helpless. Our only means of survival is to bond immediately with that first person and that first caregiver that we have in our life. The person who is there for us, we are fully dependent on them. And their responsibility is to make sure that our primary physiological needs are being met. That means food, shelter, things like that, changing our diapers, as well as our emotional needs. This means soothing, offering love and caring. Now, if a parent is very sensitive towards their child, if they're very attuned to their child's needs, then a secure attachment will be built. And in that case, the parent's presence equals safety. If, however, the perceived needs of the child are not being met, if the parent is emotionally unavailable, if they're not responsive all the time or consistently, if when they are sought out for attention or affection or support, they're not always there, the child learns that they're not always safe. There's not always someone there to look after them, and then an insecure bond will develop. When we have an attachment style that is secure, when our parents are there for us, when our primary caregiver shows up in a predictable manner, we build trust. We learn that we can rely on our caregiver to make sure that our needs are being met. Secure attachment happens when a child is given space and freedom to explore the world, and the parents, they're close. They're not overwhelmingly in the child's face being like, don't touch that, don't touch that, don't touch that. And they're also not like, it's fine, they'll learn, let them touch a few light sockets. They're there to make sure that the child is safe and the child learns that they are being kept safe. When that happens, a secure attachment is formed. A child learns in this situation that if they have a need, they can signal it. Now, for babies, that means crying. And that when that happens, they can expect a prompt, predictable, and accurate response to their needs. This gives the child a feeling of control of their lives very, very early on. If the child is experiencing any kind of distress, they are reassured and soothed. And so they learn how to calm their own emotional state and they develop an internal model for what it means to be soothed and comforted. People who grow up with this type of attachment style, and by the way, it's about 60% of the population, are very easily able to regulate their own emotions and feelings in a relationship with someone. And again, this could mean a friendship, or this could mean romantic in terms of a partner. Now, obviously, the closer someone is to us in a relationship, the more magnified our attachment style will be. So while you might be able to get along okay with friends, with your partner, it might be more magnified. People who have a secure attachment style are really good at bonding, at opening up. They just inherently trust people. They're not naive, but they're very trusting. They believe that people are worthy of trust and that they're mostly going to show up for them and be there for them. People with a secure attachment style can communicate their needs very effectively. They're comfortable with being close to people and mutual dependency, but they're also okay to have some space. And when they have that space, they'll use the time to explore. They're okay actively seeking emotional support. They're also okay with offering emotional support without feeling overburdened. And more importantly, they're very good at reflecting on how they are showing up in the relationship. They're very self-reflective. So let's say you weren't lucky enough to grow up with a caregiver that was good at attuning to your needs. Let's say they were unpredictable in their attunement, or their best guess wasn't always very good. In that case, an insecure attachment will develop, and there are three different kinds of insecure attachment. There's anxious attachment, avoidant attachment, and fearful or disorganized attachment. Now, it's really helpful to understand these by looking at them on a spectrum, because of course, nothing in our life is black and white. This is all on a spectrum, and you might fit very solidly into one category, or you might be more in the middle. So if you imagine a horizontal axis and a vertical axis. On the horizontal axis, on the very far end, on one side, we have self-confidence, and on the opposite end, we have anxiousness. On the vertical axis, at the very, very top, it's the seeking out of others, and at the very bottom, the avoidance of intimacy. It is the interaction of these four different characteristics that determine our attachment style. Someone who has a lot of self-confidence and is okay and actively seeks others out would put them more in the secure part of the spectrum. If someone seeks others out, but they're also very anxious about it, that's where they're going to have the anxious attachment style. We're going to go through each of these. If there's a lot of anxiety and they avoid intimacy, you're looking at fearful or disorganized. And if they avoid intimacy, but they have a lot of confidence in themselves, that's the avoidant attachment. So let's go through these one by one. So anxious attachment. For someone with an anxious attachment style, the thought of being alone is terrifying and causes very high levels of anxiety. Someone with this type of attachment style tends to have a very negative self-image, but they have a very positive view of others. They often seek approval. They seek support. They seek reassurance. They value relationships, but they're often quite worried that their loved one is not as invested as they are. That means that they have a very high fear of abandonment. And because they don't know how to soothe themselves, they will rely on their partner to help soothe their anxiety. This very easily causes codependency. Codependency is when it takes two people to manage one person's emotional state. Someone who has an anxious attachment style tends to see any absence of support or intimacy as threatening. And so they will respond with clinginess, with neediness, with demands and expectations, which we talked about last week. And they'll get hyper preoccupied with one or two things in the relationship, and they'll come across as fairly desperate for love. So what causes this? People who have an anxious attachment style likely grew up in a culture that put pressure on you to emotionally regulate at least one of your parents. This could be as the result of a single parent or addiction or mental challenges. One parent relied on you emotionally for support. Your neediness and your dependency was rewarded. The more that you helped them, the more that you received love. Sometimes the parents are available, and other times they're not. And because a child doesn't understand the complexities of an adult life, they internalize this and they start to punish themselves when the parent is unavailable. I think it's because of something that they've done. Now, of course, your attachment style is one of the deepest programs that you run. So all of this happens way outside of your awareness, way outside of your awareness. When we have an anxious attachment style, anytime things are going good, our brains will start to have us remember all the times in the past that it was good and then it went bad. And so as soon as things get good in our relationships, we're going to think about all the times it wasn't good. And how inevitably it's going to happen again. And that causes us to fear our partner leaving us, which leads to clinginess and codependent behaviors. There is an author named Stan Tatkin. At the end, I'll give you some resources. He's one of them. He wrote a wonderful book called Wired for Love. He does a lot of research on attachment style. He has something called the PACT Institute. He talks about people with anxious attachment style as being allergic to hope. And I remember that being quite profound for me. Now, let's say you grew up in an environment where you didn't have that experience, where the environment was focused on your performance, where individuality was highly, highly rewarded. Then you may end up with what's called an avoidant attachment style. Someone with an avoidant attachment style perceives themselves as a lone wolf. They don't believe that they actually need relationships. They're completely fine on their own. They have a very high self-esteem and a fairly good positive view of themselves. They also have a fear of depending on others or being depended on. Being in any kind of a social bond or a romantic relationship can feel very constricting and suffocating to them. As a result, they will avoid emotional closeness. For them, it's not safe to show their emotions. They were taught as a child that emotions are not okay. And so they will hide or suppress their emotions. They are terminally independent, and that often leads them to feeling unwanted and unaccepted. So while they like to consider themselves lone wolves, they will also feel left out. So what causes this attachment style? Avoidant attachment style happens when we grow up in an environment that prioritizes our performance and the self over relationships, Everyone in the family is encouraged to be independent, but that familial bond of learning how to depend on people in an interdependent model isn't actually promoted. As a child, likely the caregiver was unresponsive to your needs. Oh, it's fine. Yeah, just get up, walk it off. You know, they didn't really tolerate a lot of expression of feelings. Children are to be seen, not heard. That can lead to this type of attachment style. The child is expected to be independent and tough, even when they don't have the skills yet to know how to do that, because that's the parent's job to teach them how to do those things. Often people with this attachment style found that when they felt close with their caregiver, they felt that they were being exploited somehow. And so they stopped expressing themselves and just became completely self-reliant. They will hide their true feelings and they will use alone time as a way to protect themselves from feeling engulfed in relationships. Whereas the anxious attachment person fears abandonment, the avoidant person fears engulfment. Because being in a romantic relationship can be kind of stressful, especially during conflict, people in a relationship with someone with an avoidant attachment style tends to find them very dismissive. Sometimes they might even label them as being a narcissist. Now, there's also the fearful, avoidant, or disorganized attachment style. This one has a lack of coherence. On one hand, they really want to belong and love and be loved. On the other hand, they're afraid to let anyone in. So whereas the avoidant person keeps people away but feels that they don't need them, the fearful, avoidant person really wants to be there but is terrified of it. They have a very strong fear that the people who are closest to them will hurt them. And they have a very hard time believing that there's any reason that anyone will ever love or support them as they are. They expect and are waiting for the rejection, disappointment, and hurt to come. In their perception, it's inevitable. And because they perceive it that way, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, which keeps them stuck. While they don't reject emotional intimacy in the same way as the avoidant, they're just terrified of it. So what causes this attachment style? This is often seen in people who have been physically, emotionally, or sexually abused in childhood. It is very much connected to trauma. It develops when the caregiver, who's supposed to be a source of safety and is technically the child's only source of safety, also becomes the source of fear. People with this attachment style experienced very highly contrasting behavior in their caregivers. Sometimes they had a lot of love and attention, and other times they were completely rejected or harmed. They were yelled at. They were told that they weren't good enough. This lack of consistency and predictability means that the child learns to fear for their own personal safety and that they have zero control in the world. They learn that they can't trust others, but they really still want it. They seek that closeness, but at the same time will reject it due to fear. So the question is, now what? So your attachment style is permanent until you take steps to heal it. So step one is to become aware of it. The next step after that is to learn how to heal through it. They used to think that your attachment style was just tough shit, sucks to be you, hardware problem. We now know that that's not true. So one of the keys to healing your attachment style is learning self-regulation. Self-regulation is the ability to attune to your own emotions and take actions to self-soothe when you become emotionally flooded. In other words, to learn to be the caregiver that you wanted versus the one that you got. What creates a secure attachment is knowing that we can rely on our caregivers to attune to us correctly and to help soothe us. Just because we didn't experience that when we were children doesn't mean that we can't learn to do this as adults. Learning how to attune to your own emotions, that doesn't mean pushing them down and being happy all the time and love and light. That means attuning to your emotions and giving them space. When you learn how to soothe yourself, how to do things that light up your soul, how to calm your own neurology, that's huge in helping you change your attachment style. This is an essential skill that will show up everywhere in your life. So how to actually do that? One, resist repressing your emotions. Practice giving them somewhere to go that's not just boinking around in your own brain. This is why I love anger work. Anger work is a 5-minute dynamic meditation that allows you to physiologically move an emotion through your body, as well as drain it from your mental space. So it's not just bouncing around in your brain all day long. It's a wonderful way to take responsibility for your emotion without barfing it onto the people around you or shoving it down deep. How to do anger work is something I talk about a lot and probably on the podcast, but you can also find the information on my website at livelifeunbroken.com/anger. It has all the steps on how to do it. It's a 3-step process, takes 5 minutes. Very helpful, very helpful. Another thing you can do to help you be more secure, which is the goal, is to learn how to identify your wants, identify your needs, identify your desires, and then express them in a healthy way. This is another way of saying boundaries, because that's really what boundaries are, knowing what you need and how to express and get your needs met in a healthy way. I talk about this a lot in episode 60 of the podcast called How to Set Boundaries Without Feeling Like a Dick. In that episode, you'll learn something that I call the magic formula for how to actually identify your wants and needs and desires and then express them in a way that feels good for you and the other person. That is part of the skill set of secure attachment. That's why I teach it. Another thing you can do is learn how to take responsibility for your own emotions and give yourself space to process them when you need them. If you need a time out from an argument, if you need a walk away from the house just to clear your mind, if you need to just create a space in your home that's yours and yours alone, taking responsibility for that and creating that space for yourself is part of being more secure. You also are going to need to learn how to focus on learning how to build trust. Trust means knowing that you can handle yourself no matter what the other person does or says. It's not about trusting other people, it's about learning how to trust ourselves and then extending it to others. I shine my light so bright, I ignite the light in others. That's what trust is supposed to be. Shine it in yourself first and then allow it to ignite in others. And I will tell you, healing your attachment style will bring up a lot of little voices in your head and stories. And so making sure you get support to fill any gaps when you get stuck up the crazy tree is really helpful. I had a lot of sessions with my own coach as I was moving through this and learning how to heal your attachment style within the framework of a relationship that's trying to be rebuilt. It's fun. It's fun. And learning how to heal your attachment style has so many profound ripple effects. So I'm going to give you some resources to get you started. These were all very helpful for me on my own healing journey. First one is a book called Wired for Love by Stan Tatkin, T-A-T-K-I-N. If you Google his name, you'll also find tons of information about attachment styles. What I love about him is that he's really good at getting super nerdy in terms of how your biology works. And he also breaks it down really nicely. So I really enjoy his perspective. There's a lot of good information about that there. There's also a website called The Attachment Project. It's attachmentproject.com. Lots of great information to understand your own attachment style more readily, as well as what specific steps that you can take. So there's lots of data. And then finally, John Gottman's book called What Makes Love Last? How to Build Trust and Avoid Betrayal. John Gottman is another leader in relationships. This is a wonderful book to help you with learning how to build trust with yourself and others. This is a skill set. Trust is a skill set, which means it can be learned. Often we don't know, one, that it is a skill set, or two, how to learn it. This book is really helpful in breaking it down and identifying some patterns. So some key concepts to remember. Remember that your attachment style forms the basis of how you define love and trust in your world, which means if you want to heal as deeply as possible, at some point, this is going to come up on your radar. Remember that your attachment style can change if and only if you take steps to heal it. If you're not taking specific actions to change it, then it's running in the background all the time. And remember that knowing how you show up in relationships and being willing to take responsibility for your attachment style and how you're showing up in the world is a huge part of a healing journey and a really important step. And as always, I want to remind you to decide you want it more than you're afraid of it. Coming face to face with what you define as love and how you show up in every relationship, everywhere in your life, especially with the people closest to you, it's terrifying for some of us. So just decide you want it more than you're afraid of it. And that's always the decision that will take you to the next step. And of course, if you have any questions about anything from tonight's circle or podcast, please know you can always reach out to me through either of my websites, either btgwellness.com or livelifeunbroken.com, or through email or through social media.
The greatest thing about this topic tonight is when you can name it, then it becomes something that you can then deal with. So thank you so much for naming me. I always said that I have a problem with accepting love. I have no problem giving it, but I don't trust it, accepting it. So, but my curious question is, I am a mom of three boys, and I'm sure at some point in their life, they're going to suggest that I may have ruined their life, or something along for some version of that. But how does this play in when you have conditions, like, let's say if you're ADHD, or if you have like certain biological conditions that, you know, otherwise you're programmed a little bit different than what we consider, you know, normal, whatever normal really is. So how does someone identify what their attachment style is, as opposed to differentiating it from their behavior from a disease, or a condition, you know, because like there's some very profound, definite attributes of somebody with ADHD. But also when I looked at some of the styles, like the attachment styles, I see it in there as well. So how do you know, if you had no ADHD, or if it wasn't a part of your makeup, then is that then truly your attachment style? And, you know, how do you change that?
So someone who has ADD or ADHD as a diagnosis has a pattern of skill set and mindset that leads to specific behaviors. A lot of those skills and mindsets can be influenced and changed. Whether or not they actively seek to change them depends on whether or not they're working for the person or not. With ADD and ADHD, a lot of times they don't have to change because everyone's changing around them. They don't learn that they actually aren't broken, that they're actually fine people who are not just fucked up from birth, that they can heal like everyone else. So in terms of separating attachment style from something like an ADD, one, focus on healing the attachment style. How can someone with ADD show up more secure? How can they self-soothe? How can they learn the skill set of that? Now, it might look different for them compared to someone who's does not have that diagnosis, but that doesn't mean that it's not possible for them. It just might look different. They might have to use different tools. So I would say that anyone who wants to heal their attachment style can. And so once they become more secure and they're showing up this way, all the little other idiosyncratic personality traits, that was the ADD. Right? But they're very much a reflection of each other. So when one aspect heals, the other part will heal. Now, whether or not someone who has that diagnosis actively seeks out the healing. Cool question. That answered the question.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it did. I mean, I just look at three of my children. I feel like I parented them all the same, and they just have such different attachment styles. And so that was my question. I wonder, you know, one struggles with ADHD, and he has a totally different attachment style than the other two. But that was really cool. Thank you.
Yeah, I had a question about, you know, kind of moving towards secure attachment. And kind of finding that healing, moving forward, secure. Is it possible that once you kind of move more into that secure attachment and you're working on yourself, is it possible to come across things that almost seem to kind of drag you back, and kind of like these things kind of pop up here and there? You're like, oh my God, like, why am I feeling this way? Like anxiety and things like that. And like, ew, I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to feel like I need somebody else's approval. Like, I don't know. Is that possible? secure attachment yet.
It is. So yes and yes. It is 100% possible to completely heal, and it's not a linear path, and it's not an overnight thing. And like every part of healing, when you're done, you're dead. So there's always going to be deeper healing. So yes, it can be healed. And at each new level, you will have a new opportunity to heal it more deeply. So how I'm responding to it this time round is very different. So I know that I've done some healing, and I'm definitely recognizing some feels coming up. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Versus the first time when it came up, I'm like, ah! So yes, it can be healed. And yes, it will also keep coming up for you to heal more deeply, because the universe is hilarious. Complaints departments that way. I don't make the rules, but yeah. Yeah, and it does change when it comes up. It does change. Mm-hmm. That's the thing with healing your attachment style. It does require some support, because it's not going to make sense to you. It's going to feel deep in your heart like this is the truth of who people are. And every little voice in your head will be like, no, 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 no. So having someone walk with you on this path can be very, very helpful.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Very cool question. My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you again for joining me for this episode of the BTG podcast, which stands for Bridge the Gap, with me, Jen Fable. Remember, if you want to experience my virtual healing circles in real time, visit www.btgwellness.com/circle. And of course, if you have any questions at any time, please know you're always welcome to reach out to me through social media, or through my websites at btgwellness.com, or through my coaching website, livelifeunbroken.com. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.